All right, everyone, it is Sunday, September 20th, 2009. It is coming to the close of September. I was planning to labor on a new episode of A2 Unplugged, but those plans got untracked. However, we're here almost 2 months after the fact to talk about Mount Kirafest down under. Aloha and welcome to A2 Unplugged, the Apple II podcast brought to you by A2Central.com, your total source for Apple II computing. Visit them on the web at www.A2Central.com and by JuiceJS, the world's premier Apple II publication. You can check them out at www.juice.gs. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is Ryan Suinaga, your host, and you are listening to A2 Unplugged, the Apple II podcast, brought to you from beautiful Kaneohe, Hawaii. Our contact info, you can reach us by email at a2unplugged@gmail.com. You can check out our website at www.a2unplugged.com, and you can reach us by voicemail at 808-218-2737. We haven't been around since the end of Kansas Fest 2009. I hope that you caught our recorded live at Kansas Fest episode that was released during the event. We don't have a whole lot to update since then on that event, even though it was held before the end of Kansas Fest. I will leave the coverage for that to a2central.com as well as JuiceGS. But we do have some great interview comments from Andrew Rowan of Australia, who attended the first annual Mount Kirafest. So without further ado, let's hear what Andrew has to say. Okay, listeners, this episode we have with us Andrew Rowan from Australia. Andrew's a guy who I've met at several Kansas Fests in the past, and he happened to be at this year's inaugural Mount Kirafest. How are you tonight, Andrew?
Very well, thanks, Ryan. It's good to finally be able to tell people about what happened. We've been looking forward to an update to come out on A2 Central about our activities, and there's been very little news about the event up till now, so it's a good opportunity to talk to people about what happened.
Okay. And what time is it there? It's 7:53 p.m. where I am, so I'm wondering what time it is where you are.
It's 3:53 p.m. here in Sydney.
Oh, okay. On Saturday.
Of the day after your day, so yeah, it's Saturday here.
Saturday, okay. So that will be good for future reference. Now, let's get down to business. How did the idea of Mount Kirafest come about?
Well, actually, Jono Downs, a contributor to CompSys Apple II newsgroup, suggested that people in Australia get together at about the same time as Kansas Fest was happening. That idea was surfaced earlier this year, let's say March or April, I think it was. And there was a really strong support for that in the newsgroup. Lots of people jumped on board and said, hey, I'll be in that. So we met together in the Down Under chat, which happens regularly on a Friday night from 9 to 11, blatant plug, in the A2 Central chat room, and discussed, you know, just what such an event might look like, what we'd like to get out of it, etc. And David Wilson is a regular attendee of the Down Under chat. He's also employed by the University of Wollongong, so he had access to fairly nice campus facilities down there. While Jono suggested initially potentially Katoomba as a meeting point because it went with the K theme, We were unable to source anything in Katoomba that would do the job as nicely as the university facilities. And with the university just under the shadow of Mount Kira in Wollongong, we were able to continue the K theme, so we didn't mind shifting the venue. But that's how it came around. I started soliciting ideas for sessions and talking to people that I knew from the Down Under chat about attending, and we came up with a core group of people willing to come along and share ideas and projects they've been working on, and it sort of went from there.
Okay. And how many attendees did you actually have down under?
There were 9 of us that showed up on the day. John Coe, Matt Jenkins, Mike Stevens, Alec Lukacs, Ken Wesson, John O'Downs, David Wilson, David Morrison, and myself.
So you've already kind of told us who the key organizers were in all of them. I'm wondering, since you've been to Kansas Fest a few times yourself, what did you think of the location and the facilities of Mount Kira Fest?
We really enjoyed the venue at the University of Wollongong in terms of room layout and access to facilities. It really helped to have David Wilson's background knowledge of how to access the internet from the room, etc. Everything's really went smoothly there from that perspective. We were staying in a motel which was off campus, and the choice of that was really a last minute thing based on them having room for us and that they had internet access. But in future, we'd probably pick somewhere slightly different. With probably wired access rather than Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was Wi-Fi only.
Yeah, it was Wi-Fi only in the rooms.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. How's about the food?
The food, we self-catered for lunches. We had pizza on the Saturday, of course, standard fare of all Apple II geeks at a conference. And on Sunday, we did our own barbecue, which is a pretty Aussie thing to do, but also prior knowledge from Kirk's K-Fest cookout was a bit of inspiration there. But for the evenings, we went out to local pub on the Friday night, and on Saturday we went to a local Greek club to participate in their buffet all-you-can-eat, which was a bit of an experience.
Okay. And was there a schedule like Kansas Fest? Were there scheduled sessions and other events?
Sure were. The website that announced Mount Kira Fest had a good rough draft of what the schedule actually turned out to be, because I'd spoken to most of the people beforehand to try and solicit presentations about what was going to happen. We had a great range of different topics. John Coe started the day off on Saturday by taking us through making a mixture of the Retro Bright de-yellowing formula, and showed us how to create it, paint it onto a piece of equipment that he had, which was a receipt printer that came off in two parts, and he showed us at the end of the day what the difference was between one part and the other that he hadn't actually used the mixture on. And that was very interesting, because the ingredients that he'd used were slightly different from the recipes online, and obviously needed to be sourced here in Australia. So we got a good insight into how to make up a mixture with local ingredients, which is really useful. David Wilson took us through trying to diagnose some problems with an Apple II Plus motherboard using an oscilloscope. This was really very interesting from a software guy's point of view. I'd never seen this kind of work before, and seeing a couple of probes hooked up to the 2 Plus and seeing what the signal sources looked like on the oscilloscope was really very interesting. And David showed us a unique solution to a problem about how do you get a steady signal coming out of the motherboard by replacing one of the chips with a DIP package that had been programmed in bits to report back the EA opcode, which the no operation opcode. So the machine was continually cycling on reading EA and doing nothing, which gave a really steady signal on the oscilloscope, and which allowed us to then trace how far through the system the signal got at various points as we moved the probe from point to point on the motherboard. And he used that to successfully track down a video problem on one motherboard we had, but we were unable to get very far with another problem. We think it might need a logic analyzer to get further. So David's promised to take us back through how to use a logic analyzer next time we meet up. After lunch, we had we tried to do a link up with Kansas Fest. Unfortunately, that didn't work as well as we would have liked.
Yeah, I was there on the other end, and I saw it didn't work as well as I think we'd like. Although I can tell you for sure, the bandwidth that was at Kansas Fest, especially in the event center, was not the best, and it was Wi-Fi only there as well.
Yeah, I think that might have been our issue. I had asked for a wired link, but somewhere in the mix that requirement seemed to have been lost, and it didn't work out as well as we'd expected. We did see a fuzzy picture of you guys, and at one point the picture hung, so we were able to hear your voices as you introduced yourselves, but weren't able to see very much. And then a lag was introduced, which just became very unpleasant, so we decided to cut it early. David Morrison was next up on the agenda, and he gave us a presentation of something that's going to be very interesting news when he makes the release about it. He's developed a way of accessing IDE CDs and DVD ROM units using the CFFA compact flash card, and he's written it so that it'll work. So what he's actually done is developed a TARPI stack in 6502, which is very interesting because it allows you to bypass SCSI for getting access to content on CDs and DVDs for 8-bit Apple IIs, which is quite an interesting feat. David has put his presentation about his project up on slideshare.net, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes afterwards. Next up was Alex Luzak. Sorry, Lukacs. He's got a number of different projects he's been working on that he showed us. He started off by demonstrating how he mounted an external compact flash adapter for his compact flash card in a small box outside the case. And then he found that that was still a bit annoying for transferring programs between one machine and the other. So what he actually did is went one step further and created a USB to IDE controller for his compact flash card, which allowed him to plug in a USB cable to his compact flash card. And when the devices were powered appropriately, it meant that he didn't have to take his card out of the reader at all. He could just share the card with two machines, so he could actually load it with one machine and then use it with the other after it had been loaded. And there's more information about that on A2 Central already. And he also demonstrated a project that he's working on to hook in a 3.5-inch floppy drive to replace his floppy drives with a disk image-based system featuring an LCD interface. And again, there's more information about that on A2 Central already, but it was interesting to see it firsthand. It looks like he's got a long way to go with actually developing software for it, but the mass of hardware that he had all connected together looked very interesting. John Coe came back and gave us another demonstration. This time he's had a huge cathode ray tube TV that he brought in just for the purpose of the demonstration. He's hooked up his 2GS to this TV via a component interface. So he was just demonstrating the quality of that, and it's potentially a solution that other people might like to look into if they're looking for a replacement monitor for their 2GS. The output was really quite acceptable. David Wilson gave us a demonstration about Vladimir Ivanov's disk 2 to 3.5-inch hard density floppy adapter. This enables a PC-style 3.5-inch MFM floppy drive to be connected to a disk 2 card. And the way, I'm not quite sure how it works, but it was making exactly the same sort of drive noises as a regular disk 2 would make, which was quite surprising. But it's a way to get around the old hardware and floppy disk problem that we have these days of deteriorating equipment, and be able to connect a standard off-the-shelf type component to the Apple II. There's been some recent activity about this in CompSys Apple II. That somebody's found one on eBay. There's a few comments about that, and there's a link to Vladimir's site from there, and there's also a mention of the project on A2 Central already. John O'Downs was next up. He's been active in a number of different 8-bit forums. His passion, I think, is 8-bit Apple IIs and also the Commodore 64, but he's been involved in a lot of different gear. His session, he was showing us a software solution that he developed to be able to look at the content of disk images via a web page. So you'd point the web page to the disk image you wanted to look at, and the server application, if you'd like, would actually inspect the disk image and be able to display to you what the content of it was, which was a different solution to the problem that we've seen about getting access to the content of disk images. Mostly you need to actually have the hardware or a program like CiderPress running on your own machine. This was an interesting way to see the content actually on the web with just a web browser. At the end of the day, I gave a small presentation of some Disk Explorer activities, utilities that had been written by Dennis Maloney in Java. Dennis wasn't actually able to attend Mount Kira Fest with us, but he gave me a heads up about his work, and took about 15 minutes just to go through and show those utilities to the attendees. Again, there's something on A2 Central about that already. It was really interesting to have put on Mount Kira Fest and get people coming out of the woodwork that I didn't really know were A, Australian, and B, find out what they'd been doing, all this really cool stuff down under. It really blew me away. Like David Morrison, who came up with the CFA ROM demonstration, I'd never heard of the guy before discussing Mount Kira Fest, and Dennis Maloney. I didn't realize he was Australian. So it was great to get in contact with these guys, and it's great to see that this event inspired them to get in touch and try and be part of the action. On Sunday, we had a session about all the announcements that had been happening at Kansas Fest. And then Mike Stevens did a presentation on Introduction to 2GS Programming with Complete Pascal. And again, his presentation is available on slideshare.net. I did a presentation about the Marinetti Open Source Project, which was a rehash of the one I did in 2007 for Kansas Fest, but I updated it with a slide about what's happened between then and now. And again, that's on slideshare.net. And then I had a quick impromptu session about trying to enable web search engines to get access to content that it's available in in periodicals that are not actually scanned yet or not available online anywhere. And as David Wilson commented, you can't grep dead trees. And I thought that was a fantastic way to sum up the problem, that we've got all these periodicals that are in our home collections potentially, or in libraries or wherever they are, and they've probably got great information about our hobby and or potentially contain a useful bit of information that somebody's looking for, but when they type in a search on Google, they're not going to get any response to that. And what I'd like to do is to facilitate search engines like Google to be able to find content in paper-based collections by contributing a table of contents to a potentially some sort of web portal that the search engines can actually search against. So, for example, a wiki would be one way of doing this. So when you do a search in Google, the moment you get a lot of responses out of Wikipedia, for example. So with a table of contents for, let's say, take an example, Australian Apple Review, then you could find out that a particular article is available there, mentions a particular piece of equipment you might be looking for, and then you know that you can find more information about it in that article, and it's just a matter of then tracking down where that physical item is located to be able to find it. So it gives you a heads up that something exists out there, and then you can take more action about it. Because if you didn't know that it existed, then you'd probably get disheartened and stop looking for it, yep. Maybe. So I've been talking about this idea for a little while, and I'm more inspired to do more about it. One of the periodicals that's dear to our hearts, Juice GS, would certainly be something that I'd like to do something in this vein with. And I believe I've got the support with Ken Gagne, the current publisher of Juice GS, to facilitate something like that happening in the future. We're just trying to find a permanent home for such content, and to nut out a format to do it in, and then I'm sure we'll get cracking on populating it with a table of content, so that being able to find articles and is possible through Google or some other search engine. That was really all the summary of all the sessions that we had. We broke at lunchtime on Sunday so that people could get back home. And I, from the comments that people made after the event, we all had a great time, and it was a good opportunity for Australians to get together. And it was unfortunate that some people who said they'd like to be able to get there were unable to join us. But we'd certainly like to do something like this again.
Okay. So you folks are thinking about another Mount Kira Fest, it sounds like.
Yeah, we'd love to get together. I used to be heavily involved in the Sydney Apple Users Group, and we had meetings every month. And it's what it really felt like. It was just like a user group meeting. You know, we're all getting together and talking about different things we've been working on. It was a really informal atmosphere, and it was great just to get together and chat about Apple II things that are happening in the local environment. It was great. So we were all keen to do something again, and potentially as close as Christmas time, we might find that we come together at another venue towards the end of the year.
I see. So, okay, so maybe not at the same time as Kansas Fest in the future.
Well, you know, if we do one at Christmas time, maybe we'll come back at the same time as Kansas Fest next year. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there a particular highlight of that event that you wanted to talk about, or something that you thought was just outstanding?
Well, the CFFA interface to CDs and DVD-ROMs from David Morrison really blew me away. the fact that this guy's written an Atapi stack in 6502 and it works. We saw it doing copying content off DVDs onto an Apple IIe. It was quite impressive. I think this has got a lot of potential to make accessing information on 8-bit Apple IIs more accessible, and it's going to have a big impact in the future. And the fact that we hadn't heard anything about this before Mount Kira Fest was really quite surprising, and wasn't quite ready for presentation he did for us. It just blew us away.
I see. Any last words on your event, Andrew? The one thing I would like to say is that I'm impressed how much presentations got done, even though there was a relatively small handful of Apple II users at this gathering.
Yeah, I think that's another comment to make is that everybody who turned up was willing to contribute in some way, which was absolutely fantastic. And although Ken Wesson was there for a day, he brought his Replica One along, and we had an informal look at that, but he didn't actually do a full presentation. But everybody else did a full presentation, and it was just great that the number of people there, they all had something to talk about and discuss. In terms of a final comment, I'd like to thank JuiceGS for providing a subscription for one of our Lucky Door prizes, and the University of Wollongong School of Computing Science and Software Engineering for actually facilitating the event. They helped us with room access, the barbecue, and internet access while we were there. So thank you very much to them. The event was really big success, and it was largely due to David Wilson's knowledge of the facilities and the facilities provided by University of Wollongong. So thank you very much to them. We also had a machine donated for the event by Apple Developer Technical Services, so I'd like to thank them for the use of that. That was displaying the Twitter feed for KFest and also allowing us to contribute our own Twitter feed for Mount Kira Fest during the weekend. And that was really well utilized, so thanks to Apple for that. The other Lucky Door prize was a Welcome to Mac DVD that was signed by Vince Briel at Kansas Fest, and I'd like to thank Ken Gagne for obtaining that and making it available to us so we could hand it out as a Lucky Door prize, so thanks, Ken. And that's really about it.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us. I'm glad we were able to get our schedules synced up. And actually, over Skype, this sounds pretty darn good, especially considering how far away we are from each other.
Yeah, well, it's only 4 hours time difference, so all our internet access from Australia goes through Honolulu, I think. So you're right on the mainline hub there.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. If that's the case, you guys must not have the best broadband, because we don't have the best broadband here.
Well, I think they've got a number of undersea pipes, so the combined effect would improve it somewhat. But I think, I think most of them go through Honolulu.
That's quite interesting. Okay, thank you very much, Andrew. Best to you and Callie and Charlie. And what did you decide to name your new baby?
Our new baby, who's just almost 3 weeks old, is Jessica Elizabeth Rowan.
Jessica. What was the name Jessica. What was the name that you folks had for her when you were not quite at the point you had an official name? I know it was something funny.
Yeah, the unofficial name was Baby Sausage, which was the name that our three-year-old boy Charlie decided to christen her with while still in utero. He came up to Carly at one stage and said, "You're going to have a baby. It's in your tummy now. I'm going to name it Baby Sausage." And this was even before Carly could confirm that she was actually pregnant, which was quite amazing. And so the name has stuck all this way through until we've officially named her last week, Jessica Elizabeth.
I see. OK, Okay, well, thanks to you. I'm sure as a new dad again for the second time, you need all the rest you can get. And so does Callie as a new mom for the second time.
So, indeed.
Yeah, but thank you very much, and I will hope to chat with you soon.
Thanks very much for the opportunity. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, take care, Andrew.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
So that's our show for this episode. I'd like to thank our guest, Andrew Rowan of Australia, for giving us the scoops on Mount CuraFest. I'd like to thank our sponsors, A2Central.com, your total source for Apple II computing. Visit them on the web at www.A2Central.com. JuiceGS, the world's premier Apple II publication. You can check them out at www.juice.gs. And listeners like you, thanks for your donations. We couldn't do A2 Unplugged without you. Malama pono, ahui ho. I'm hoping I can get an episode out a lot sooner than these couple of months that it's been. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.